Blog Talk Radio.
Tune in for the special music. The special music is coming up. Nice to meet you, where you been? Okay, I have to start over. Nice to meet you, where you been? I could show you incredible things. Magic, madness, heaven, sin. Saw you there and I thought. Okay, I'm just skipping to the part that I know. So it's gonna be forever. So it's gonna be forever. Oh, we're gonna go down in flames. You can tell me when it's over, if the high was worth the pain. Got a list of long-time lovers. They'll tell you I'm insane. 'Cause you know I love the players, and you love the game. 'Cause we're young and we're reckless. We're gonna take this way too far. If I leave you breathless, or I leave you with a nasty scar. Got a long list of ex-lovers. They'll tell me you're insane. But I got a blank space, and I'll write your name. Cherry lips, crystal skies. I could show you incredible things. Stolen kisses, pretty lies. You're the king, baby, I'm your queen. Find out what you want. Be that boy for a month. Wait, the worst is yet to come. Oh no. Screaming, crying, perfect storm. I can make all the tables turn. Okay, I'm skipping out of that one. So tonight's episode is on Iran, and John's late calling in. Basically, Trump told, he threatened Iran. He said he's going to obliterate them if they talk smack about us. And the Iranian leader, Rouhani, stated that he will be questioning the authority of the White House because he finds President Trump to be mentally disabled, confused, and not following foreign policy guidelines. So basically he was doing a psychoanalysis of our president, stating that he's not capable of making decisions that are rational in regards to regional and territorial conflict. Also, there is a foreign minister in Iran that I did invite to the show, and he drew a picture of the United States and the whole globe, actually. So he drew an outline of the United States and an outline of Iran to show the miles and distance between us and Iran, and to say that we are harboring in their territory, not vice versa. The same leader, whose name I will draw up shortly, stated that where the drone was going, which is worth $115 million, was inside Iranian territory, and the United States adamantly affirms that it was in the Strait of Hormuz. It was nowhere near that, any type of land border. Iran's military did warn it could stop oil shipping, though, through the Straits of Hormuz as far back as Monday. The same day it also warned that it would increase its stockpile of enriched uranium beyond the 2015 Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as JCPOA. Coming in the wake of the June 13th attack on two oil tankers, which the U.S. has blamed on Iran, Tehran is now presenting the Trump administration with its greatest challenge in 2.5 years. But since coming into power, President Trump pretty much has rooted his foreign policy in the doctrine that includes threats and an instinct to overturn traditional American foreign policy with rhetoric and action. This can be seen in the U.S. decisions to move the U.S. embassy to Israel, which many Muslims oppose, and leave the JCPOA, which was the Iranian deal that Obama and other worldwide leaders initiated. Trump also wants to avoid continuing the treaties established through UNESCO, slap tariffs on China, threaten Mexico over immigration, and even the December 2018 announcement that the U.S. would leave Syria was short-sighted and abrupt. Not every sudden policy shift turns out the way Washington expects, but Trump's instincts have played well with the foreign policy team that he had in place in March of 2018, even though he walked away from bad decisions like the one in Syria. It was done quietly and without admitting a policy reversal. In other words, he left troops there and he beefed up other troops. Iran now presents Washington with its first real nightmare scenario. It has called Trump's bluff in general because first Trump threatened them last week, then he backed down with economic sanctions, and now he's threatening to obliterate them. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said on 6/13 that Iran or its proxies were responsible for a May 12th attack on 4 commercial ships, a May 14th attack on Saudi Arabian oil pipelines, a rocket attack in Baghdad, and an attack of another kind in Afghanistan. We have one host on the line. I believe it's Wade. Good evening. This is Jane. Hi, do you have an Arizona prefix?
Arizona, yes, the phone, yes, correct.
Right, John is driving back from his brother's, but he is going to be calling in. And we don't have to just do it on the Middle East. Supposedly there was a debate tonight of some sort. Oh, I noticed you just said you weren't feeling well on your text. Do you want to talk about something else until John joins the show?
Oh, let me see. Yeah, boy, there was a bunch of topics. I can't remember.
Well, first of all, what are you not feeling well about?
Oh, no, it's just physical, just congestion, and I cough and that stuff. Not emotional, not feeling. Not an interesting topic.
No, I meant physical. I'm sorry. I meant physical.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just going to let you know, there was a couple protests in New York last week, and there's all.
Okay.
I think the first debate for the campaign 2020 starts tomorrow. Did you notice if there was any debate tonight on TV? I couldn't remember if someone told me it was Tuesday or Wednesday. Did you see any debates on TV today?
All of them had a TV.
Well, anyways, there are a couple protests going on around against the country. First, let me just ask you this. Do you think that Trump should use more appropriate language on Twitter when approaching Iranian leaders, like saying we're going to obliterate them if they take any steps towards attacking us?
I don't know enough about this to comment a whole lot, but, you know, in my experience, you want to keep it nice. Sometimes I guess that's a strategy that leaders use to kind of, rattle the saber and sound tough. And so don't know if that's what he's doing. You know, to be able to say more, I'd have to look at the specifics. Hopefully we won't have trouble with Iran. I hope not. I understand.
Right. There's not much to know. Washington accused the Iranians of meddling with a couple of our ships in the waters a few weeks ago. They blamed a rocket attack at our embassy in Baghdad on an ultra terrorist group that came out of Iran, and they're still not 100% certain where the attack came from, an area where terrorists usually linger in East Baghdad. And then if you read one article, they sent a rocket from the back of a truck, but it was actually a sophisticated rocket, into the air and downed a $115 million United States drone, which supposedly has murdering capabilities, but the United States claims it was just a research tool, and that it was an expensive drone in the Strait of Hormuz. And the Iranian foreign policy minister said it was on land. So they both have aerial shots on Twitter trying to prove the other person wrong. So that's basically it. What I'm going to do is I have a couple other things to tell you about what's going on in Chicago and New York. So I'm going to put John's song on until I get a hold of two other hosts. And then you can regroup with maybe a cup of tea. I'll see you back in 3 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Hi, Wade. John will be calling any minute. Now, you live in Chicago, Wade, so I have a story for you until we get more co-hosts on the line. Trump has officially delayed deportation threats, and he postponed immigration raids across the country. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who must be Native American, and other city officials stepped up their support for undocumented workers. She repeated that Chicago police will not participate in the raids or provide information to ICE. Back off, she said. Well, some cities are going to fight it, Trump said. If you look at Chicago, they're fighting it. The postponement of the raids, aside from immigration communities in Chicago, were bracing for federal agents on Saturday. Nobody should be detained without reason or warrant, said one alderman named Byron Lopez as he handed out flyers to other residents in the Pilsen neighborhood. The raids were supposed to start on Sunday. So what have you noticed about your neighborhood? And have you noticed any type of activity? Because some people were putting signs up in their shops.
No, I haven't any activity. You know, that is an interesting topic, too. I remember about, like, hearing about sanctuary. You
what
know,
kind of neighborhood do you live in? Is it pretty diverse?
It's pretty diverse over here. But I think more a little black neighborhood more so. But I think it's interesting, like in California, they've had the sanctuary cities. And then I hear parts of California rebelled against the sanctuary city ruling.
Because they wanted some like crackdown to happen in those certain neighborhoods.
Well, those people wanted to go along with the federal government. And so basically, I mean, from my understanding, I don't understand the whole sanctuary city thing, but I believe
it's a sanctuary means like it's a protection area where like there's certain programs that even if the feds come in, they can't just come and do whatever they want. And those cities have special provision for immigrants, like they have extra food programs and extra crisis shelters and things of that nature.
And there are
a couple federal programs for situations like that. But what happens was like presidents who are conservative threatened to end the funding for certain federal programs that are in those sanctuary cities. And they want to interface with local police to nail the people who are there illegally. But it depends on the leadership of the local cities and local municipalities if they're going to cooperate with the feds.
Okay, here's my question. Because this is what makes it really interesting. I mean, is like having a sanctuary city, is this like, because if you're saying, okay, we're not going to cooperate with federal agents and stuff, so is that under federal law? And I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Well, it's mandated.
Is it considered?
It's usually mandated by the locals. I'm going to look it up while I pull John in. He's been on hold 2 minutes. He's almost home from his about 2-hour trip. But I'm going to look up the official parameters. But I do know that the local leadership, like for example, Berkeley would not pay city taxes during the second Bush War, where Bush Jr. went to Iraq. They refused to pay city taxes to help fortify the war during that time. So it's kind of similar to that. But let's say hi to John. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Hurricane Jane. How are you?
Good. I'm doing fine, and Wade is a little sick.
Aw, sorry to hear that. Wade's a good man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were deflecting the main topic until you got on the air. Now, right now we're talking about sanctuary cities, and he asked me it. So I'm going to give Wade the official definition. A sanctuary city refers to municipal jurisdictions, typically in North America and Western Europe, that limit their cooperation with the national government's efforts to enforce immigration laws. So it's mainly liberal strongholds that do things like that, like buck the federal government and the federal laws.
Okay. So it is illegal.
Well, it's a
civil disobedience.
Let's say the feds come in like ICE and they round up like 15 to 20 people. And then they're working at the same factory, like Dole Foods. Maybe the city has an attorney on hand or something, and they try to prevent the feds from just, like, whisking them out of there. Or, I don't know, just it's a number of situations. Like, I can't just give one example. John, since you live in L.A., maybe you could give a more concrete example.
Well, actually, you're doing pretty good. From what I understand, historically, sanctuary cities used to be more of a biblical concept, and that is if, say, you accidentally killed someone and were charged a manslaughter, what they would do is send you to a city, a sanctuary city, where you had to live there and stay. If you moved out of that city, the family could avenge themselves. They could come after you and kill you. But if you're in that sanctuary city, it's like, hey, you can't touch me. You know, I'm going to live here, basically be apart from you. And it was a form of protection. That way people weren't running around trying to reinforce the law. So kind of this concept spilled over, you know, to our era where we don't run around and try to kill people, but people want to escape from the law to feel safe. And it's an interesting concept. I think we should show compassion, but the problem is when you force compassion. Like, if grandma falls down in the street, obviously you should try and help her. But
John, just so you know,
that I have to help every homeless person or every, an example, people in sanctuary cities, these are people that are not supposed to be in the country. And this isn't like something from, last week we just found out about it, there's a new rule and they changed the law. This has been going on for decades. People know they're not supposed to be here. They're here illegally. So the question is, do you solve the problem by accommodating bad behavior?
Well, I want to clarify one thing. Some people think that sanctuary cities refers to a city that doesn't prosecute immigrants for crimes, but it's basically what I said the first time. It's for a municipality that protects low-priority immigrants from deportation. So, but they still are obligated to turn over people who have committed serious crimes. Now, there are some programs established in these liberal-minded cities. Like I was telling Wade about food protection and maybe emergency housing. But the federal government does have the authority to strip those programs if they want to be mean. Like, you know, there's all kinds of ways that taxes get collected, and the feds could go in there and usurp some of these city and local regional funds to disable whatever they're trying to do to protect the immigrants.
True. Kind of goes along with the program that I'm not deciding to give money. Government officials are deciding to enforce laws or protect people or spend money. So I don't have a say about it. The only say I have is who I elect. And the people elected Donald Trump to shut this down. Now he's doing that, and he's getting resistance from other elected officials. So this is kind of where, you know, this is where the rubber meets the road. Are we going to let the person who is elected enforce what we want, or at least a certain majority among the electoral college, or are we going to, not let him do his job?
Well, I kind of agree with some of the crackdowns. Go ahead, Wade. I think you have a comment.
Oh, yeah, I mean, even this week I had a huge online federal versus anti-federalist debate, you know, it's still the big discussion, and I do find it kind of odd. You know, I talk with Democrats a lot, that's been a subject, and that ties in, right? It's like if they get so upset about Trump, And then I say, well, you know, like, we should have such, the federal government shouldn't have so much power, but it doesn't have so much power. And then all of a sudden a lot of them are like, no, we need to just be together, and, you know, but, you know, you were talking about how unbearably horrible Trump is, and yet you want the federal government to have a lot of...
I think, I think, and John, it has to do a lot with how people behave. Like, let's say we're in Escondido where there's 80% illegals and 50% of the force are Hispanics. Are they going to be compelled to promote the ICE to come in there and obliterate, which is Donald Trump's new favorite word, obliterate the Mexican community that might be working illegal in this factory or that? It just depends on where you live.
I don't think they should be going after illegal people that commit crimes. And you know, that should be, I mean, anybody they should go after that commits, especially violent crimes. I mean, and even these protesters and stuff that are, like, burning cars and hitting people, they should go after them. But, no, I think it's a waste of resources to try to weed out every vote. We shouldn't allow illegal immigrants to vote because, you know, you need to be accepted to vote. We shouldn't be pulling people from working because we need people to work. And I don't...
About a year ago, we did a show on, we did a show about in central Los Angeles, it was a little bit north towards Pasadena, that two illegals were elected into a city council, and they weren't even legal.
Wow. That's interesting.
So I want to kind of transition out of this. I know, John, are you home yet?
What were you saying?
Are you back at your house yet?
Yeah, in fact, I'm walking up to the door. Well, kind of touching on that subject is the in California, they elected Ronald Reagan and also Nixon. That's not happening anytime in the next few decades because we've, because of immigration, we've changed the demographic to allow a lot of people in who have kids, and later on they register, and, you know, also some people register illegally, and basically they vote Democratic because they're promised, you know, things. That's kind of the Democratic party. Just it will give you, you know, who wouldn't want free education, free medicine, free, you know, schooling? Everyone wants that. So you're naturally going to vote for that. There's no one, you'd be stupid not to. I mean, hey, they're giving away free food at, you know, the store. Who's voting for it? I am. I don't blame them. But the point is, it's a cheat. I mean, you're basically just creating, flooding the market. It'd be like, let's have a whole bunch of Russians come in, and they're going to vote for a Russian president. You know, maybe not today, but if you bring in a few million Russians over the next, you know, 20 years in California, you'll have a Russian president because that's what they're going to vote for. So that's the issue that's at stake.
I do think, though, that it's not so much that I knew when I lived in Boyle Heights and when I lived in San Fernando, there are, I'd say 30%, maybe 20% of Mexicans do vote Republican, believe it or not. Because they have a competition within themselves over Mexicans who have lived here 50 years and matriculated through the system, and those that have maybe lived here 2 to 5 years and just, you know, walked in. So they have their own territorial disputes. But the fact of the matter is that I think California is just a liberal haven in the sense where people who do feel like they live at the margins need to feel safe, and especially in the big cities, maybe not the San Joaquin Valley where the vegetable and crops are grown, but people who feel marginalized don't feel threatened in L.A. And even Don said that, like, prejudice in Milwaukee was a lot stronger than prejudice in L.A. Like, a lot of people just blended in.
Well, also to you have to look at remember I don't know, 50 years ago, 60s, you remember all the protests? Where was it happening? It wasn't happening in Nebraska or in, like North Dakota.
And the Chicano movement happened, too.
Berkeley, the Bay Area, all the, basically the media and the entertainment down here was very anti the establishment. A lot of kids that were liberal. I remember the Weathermen. I remember the Abelos.
That was also in Madison, Wisconsin. They
True.
Blew up a science building during the Vietnam War, the Weathermen.
And the plan was we will infiltrate your society through the educational system. We'll get into places of influence and mold minds. And over a period of time, not today, but long game, will take over the mindset. And you look at the majority of our colleges, which were 131 universities, I think 125 of them were Christian founded and funded and, or Catholic. And look at where universities are now. They're all secular. And that transition's happened.
That's not 100% true because, well, first of all, there's Occidental College in California, but up here where I live, there's a College of Saint Scholastica, which is a Catholic university. It's $31,000 a year, and over 80% of the students go to school on special funding or scholarships. There's also the public universities up here too, but there is some tradition up here, even K through 12, a lot of people don't like the Catholic Church, but they like their kids in Catholic schools.
Right.
Even an agnostic I talked to last weekend, she wants to put her 3-year-old in Catholic schools in the Twin City area, Minneapolis. Now, can we transition to the main topic once John gets settled in? So, John, do you think Trump should use the strong language of obliterating Iran just because Rouhani said that he's one pop short of a six-pack? Rouhani basically said that Trump has mental health issues and the White House is unstable and they can't form effective policy because they don't know what they don't know what the H they're doing.
Well, I guess the question is, do you think Iran likes the United States? Do you think that the Ayatollah...
The leadership certainly doesn't. And tonight they said that one more economic sanction against them, and they will never use diplomatic approach to the United States again. In other words, the next person who feathers the fans, there's going to be a war.
And
wow.
Do you think they'll ever embrace a Western society or non-Muslim values ever favorably?
At this point, with a torch in their hand, they don't give a flying F. They hate Donald Trump. They said our drone didn't belong in. They claim it was on dry land, but it was in the Strait of Hormuz. They feel like we're blaming and targeting them. They hate our effing guts. And even Vladimir Putin got on the airwaves tonight and said that if the U.S. and Iran can't straighten things out, it's going to be an international disaster within 1 week.
Well,
the whole world could be turned upside down.
So you're saying after eight years of President Obama, who bowed before
he negotiated.
When he met with many leaders, you can look this up, whether in Saudi Arabia or whether it was in different military type of regimes that were Muslim, he would bow before them. He would, from the waist down, he would you know, basically like you're my master kind of move. And
well,
Trump
maybe that's
do
a
that.
Form of diplomacy. Jimmy Carter kissed the Shah of Iran's ass, and the Shah,
right.
And none of the Iranians even liked the Shah of Iran.
And
he came over here for surgery, and they wanted his head on a platter because they felt like his he was ripping off the riches of their country by
right.
holding all the wealth within his individual leadership.
So what I'm asking is, with all of that display of love from our former president, did that make them any more compliant with the
yes.
rule?
I overheard some Iranian students say that they posted some pictures of Obama in their towns and said that it's the first time they felt respected by the United States in their lifetime.
So you're saying that they stopped funding terrorism and involvement
I didn't
with all
say
the
that.
Middle East?
Why are you putting words in my mouth? Remember when Naj called the show that one time? Don't be provoking me.
I never
said anything about terrorism.
Well, you're saying that Donald Trump
said that they were thankful. I said they were thankful that an American leader didn't always go after their nation state in a negative way. That's all I was saying.
So you just stated that Donald Trump has basically, in effect, flamed the fires of the revolution or of this path of non-negotiation and of anger and vengeance. And I'm saying that previous to that, we had a president that licked
well,
the
well, if you're running a country every other day with obliterating them on Twitter, that's not exactly rational foreign policy.
A president that gave $1.3 billion in cash plus concessions and sanctions of $150 billion to a country that still funds terrorists to destroy us and Israel and dissettle the Middle East. And you think that that approach was working? I'm asking.
Let me just reframe it this way. We've had this debate before on the show. Part of it was loans, that money that we seized in 79 when the Khomeini took over. Maybe it wasn't smart to give cash. Maybe we could have given them like $2 million in pharmaceutical products that their own citizens needed. Like maybe Obama could have used that approach instead of giving them cold cash.
He got hostages, but he said he wasn't paying ransom for them, but they did give us back hostages.
We're talking about the Obama era. We're not talking about the Carter era right now. Okay,
I'm actually saying Obama got hostages from Iran. It wasn't just Carter. Obama got a couple hostages after he gave him the money.
Yeah, I think he got four, right?
And he said afterwards,
four?
I was paying ransom for. We don't negotiate ransom for hostages. But after he gave him money, he got hostages.
What are you trying to say to me that Iran's a terrible? This is your philosophy. Iran's a terrible country. There's no way to negotiate him, so we might as well obliterate him. That's what you're
no.
saying.
Actually, what I said is. Iran's position regarding us is that we're a terrible country. We're Satan. We've been called the great Satan in Carter's time and every president. We're the devil. We are the anti-Allah. So that's why they fund these things. And that's never going to change in their mind. And that's okay. I'm at peace with it. I really don't wish them ill will. All Trump is doing is sanctions. He's not attacking them. He's not fighting them. He's saying, okay, we're just going to shut off the money machine here. And unless they're willing to negotiate, and they don't want to negotiate.
Well, actually, John, he did later in the, well, while you were in Riverside, you know, having fun with your family, Trump went back on Twitter and threatened them after Rouhani called Trump mentally unstable. So I'm going to give you guys all a breather. Take a 3-minute breath, and I'm going to play a clip. Okay? Actually, it's about 5 minutes. So you and Wade can regroup.
Sure.
Here we go.
Welcome back again, everyone. It's Dina Kalman here with CWW7 News. And for today's broadcast, I'd like to bring you a quick review in regards to the recent events between the United States and Iran. And I'd like to take you to this first report from Reuters. And they are reporting that Russia is warning the United States to stop provoking Iran. The comments from the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister followed an announcement that the United States planned to send around 1,000 more troops to the Middle East for defensive purposes. Iran's president said on Tuesday that Iran would not wage war against any nation, and the Kremlin called for restraint from all sides. Moscow has repeatedly warned Washington and its regional allies about what he called unthinking and reckless pumping up of tensions in an explosive region. Now that we see we are unending and sustained U.S. attempts to crank up political, psychological, economic, and yes, military pressure in Iran in quite a provocative way. These actions cannot be assessed as anything but a conscious course to provoke war, stated the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister. He also stated if Washington did not want war, it had to show it. If that's really how it is, then the U.S. should step back from reinforcing its military presence. Meanwhile, the Washington Examiner is reporting that the United Kingdom is deploying a contingent of Royal Marines to protect their warships in the Persian Gulf, using speedboats and helicopters to protect the Royal Navy warships and UK merchant vessels. 100 Marines will form Special Purpose Task Group 19 and patrol the region from Britain's new naval base in Bahrain. The Times of Israel is reporting that U.S. President Donald Trump's Iran policy is ultimately aimed at bringing them to the negotiating table. Both Trump and Iran said they are not seeking war, but many lawmakers fear that as the United States builds up its forces in the region, it increases the chances of the two sides being accidentally drawn into a conflict. Brian Hook told the House Committee on Foreign Affairs on Wednesday, "No one should be uncertain about our desire for peace or our readiness to normalize relations should we reach a comprehensive deal. We have put the possibility of a much brighter future on the table for the Iranian people." He also added, "Our pressure campaign is working. Lawmakers, Democrats in particular, question the administration's so-called maximum pressure campaign if it is a recipe for war. One Democrat stated that rather than force Iran back to the negotiating table, the administration's policy is increasing the chances of miscalculation, which would then bring the United States and Iran closer to a military conflict." However, Brian Hook told lawmakers that Iran has chosen to use military force despite Trump's Iran policy.
Okay, that's it. I think Iran has provoked us on some levels. First of all, they downed a 150 million drone, which I believe was over the Sea of the Strait of Hormuz. And I also think that they were involved in the rocket launch towards the Baghdad embassy. And they also were messing with our ships a few weeks ago, but nothing major happened. So does John or Wade have a response?
Well, this is a case of, do you want to have your cake and eat it? The charge that we've been hearing for the last several months, actually 2 years, I think you see on Facebook every day that Trump is Putin's bitch, that Trump licks his boot, that Trump is his whatever, right? And you see this every day. And then here, you just saw a statement from Putin and other people that he's not. They actually think he's trying to start a war, that he's doing this and that. And then Trump is basically saying, I'm not starting a war. I'm waiting here. I want to talk. I can bring the heat, but I won't. He was the one showing restraint when the war hawks were ready to start launching. So, you know, he's actually been the one. He doesn't like war. Trump likes to negotiate with currency.
Yeah.
He likes to play hardball. That's how he does business deals. He sees no pleasure in blood being shed, unlike all of our other presidents previously. They love to put soldiers out there and watch them bleed and die for money. They may not say it, but that's what their actions say. Trump's actions are get out of war. He doesn't want – and the other thing is he plays very hard, and then he will back off. If people comply, And I like that. Actually, I'm appreciating that. He's actually doing something. He's not spending decades and decades sitting around. He's going straight to the point. Play ball with me or I'll play hardball. And if you're nice, look at him and Kim Jong-un or Putin. He'll stand there and he'll smile. And then when everyone says, oh, look, you know, see, he's like, he's Putin's lover. He can smile and stand next to Theresa May and the Queen. He can be totally cool. Or if you want to play hardball, he can turn around and say, let's duke it out, you know, with Justin Trudeau or Macron or Merkel. But yet he can turn around and smile and shake their hands and say, this is wonderful people. I want, you know, to make Iran great again. I mean, so is he really a warmonger or is he a guy who gets stuff done?
I don't like his style. You know I don't like it, so I'm going to let Wade answer.
I like results. Style means nothing.
I mean,
go ahead, Wade.
I mean, talking tough worked for Reagan. I don't know. You know, he, I think Reagan saw a lot of results and didn't I don't think he went to war with the presidents. And, you know, the international scene was got pretty bad like this and all that. And Obama was so nice to people. Same with Carter. It got so bad after Carter, and Carter was so nice. So sometimes
that was a tough time in America.
Yeah, maybe sometimes the president is better off being tough. I don't know.
Okay, Wade, I have a question for you.
I'm tired of people being nice and smiling and putting a knife in my back and taking my wallet and ripping it out and taking my culture and morals and family unit and flushing it down the toilet and just saying, isn't that nice? And don't say anything about it or we'll ban you on Facebook. I like a guy who walks in the room, the bullies are beating me up, and he's walking in there and he's saying, back up. And he's got a big fist. And I like this guy. Do I like his methods? Do I live like him? No. But I've been waiting for someone like this to finally step in the room and say, faith, family, and freedom. You can have your Bibles. You can have Merry Christmas and say it. You don't have to apologize. And I like that. You know, is he, you know, is his style the way I would do things? No. That's why my approach doesn't get things done. But I would rather have that than smiling people deliver. Go for it. Yes.
Okay, Rouhani's not just, forget about religion for a minute. Rouhani's just not attacking Trump on his character flaws. He was discussing today in a press conference that we've taken over and dominated the whole country of Iraq. So let's just say Russia landed in Mexico and they had full control over Mexico, and then they're bitching about the United States. Like, he's talking about regional politics and how Iran feels like the U.S. shouldn't even be over there in a dominant position trying to send drones everywhere and spy on people. So he's, like, pissed off in general, but also over the fact that the country's been rather crippled for the last few years with these economic sanctions that the whole European community supported and was working. They felt like the Iranian deal was working.
Well, as you know, Donald Trump was against the war in Iraq, and even Barack Obama said he'd get us out of there, and he didn't. You know, we still had the same thing with Syria. We'll get out of Syria. He didn't. We'll go get ISIS. 8 years and 8 years of Bush still going on. Trump, 2 years in and out. I want him in. I want him out. Let's get the job done. Philosophically, 9/11, I mean, as far as going into Iraq afterwards, and I mean, we went there because of 9/11, but Iraq wasn't the reason for 9/11. So Trump actually, that's not on him. He doesn't want that. Bush did because he's a globalist. Obama and Clinton.
Use all our history just because he doesn't want it. But
well,
the thing is, John, is that Let's see the Rouhani call Trump a crazy motherfucker. He's going to act on that just because it's damaging his ego. He's not going to give a shit about the Iranian-U.S. relations.
Well, actually, he wants Iran to prosper, and he wants that by them putting their resources into their oil industry, into building the economy.
No, he doesn't. Otherwise, he wouldn't have. Otherwise, he wouldn't have quit the Iran deal.
We're strangulating
them with sanctions right now.
That's because
we're
he wants to.
Strangulating them.
You can't have peace if they're pursuing the means to an end of nuclear power, and they have a philosophy between their religion.
But you think that's all they're doing? They're just living inside their country, struggling too. They're not trying to blow people up, and their country didn't use the word obliterate. Our country did. And Wade doesn't want to hear us arguing, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, they're not arguing.
No, it's interesting.
I'm just stating the opinion.
All right, yeah.
Actually, the thing is,
compare point of views.
Trump's idea is he wants these countries focused on spending their money, building hotels, making deals, going back and forth, trading, having their own manufacturing, having us have our own manufacturing.
We haven't bought oil from Iran. The Russian and Chinese are buying oil from them.
Well, they're actually buying oil from us too.
In that sense, they are our enemy. Like, if the U.S. says F you to them, then Russia and China are going to pick up the slack. They're not going to give two hoots if the U.S. is trying to punish them.
Trump doesn't care if other people make money. He wants everyone to make money. He doesn't want to have nuclear capability with countries like North Korea and Iran, who are willing. Their mindset is they're willing to die for the greater good of their faith or their belief system. Christian countries don't want to do that. We don't want to blow up Russia and China. That's because we have nuclear power. Because we don't want to blow everyone up. We're trying to keep peace. These are countries that...
Then why is he saying on Twitter 3 times in 1 day we're going to obliterate them?
Well, what did he say before then? He said, I want to make Iran great again. I want them to negotiate. All he wants them to do is stop the nuke program. And they keep saying, we're going to ramp it up. Well, what's he going to say? Well, if you want to play hardball, we'll play hardball. Sure. You have to call the bluff with someone crazy.
Okay, well, Wade is ill. Don never called in. Oh, we finally have Ben on the line 23 seconds later.
Yeah.
Ben, save us from ourselves. Wait, Ben, save us from ourselves.
I'm here.
Okay, well, John's argument is that John is under the impression that Trump wants Iran to succeed economically, which is the biggest hunk of bullshit I've heard, even worse than Don saying all white people are evil. I'm saying
that
Rouhani's pretty much appalled by Trump's behavior, and I don't really know if the Iranians are trying to individually provoke the U.S., but they really don't want them over there in any way, shape, or form. They don't want their military presence in the Strait of Hormuz and places like that. And is there any middle ground in this newest rising conflict between our nation and theirs?
Can anybody give a good explanation why oil tankers have been bombed? Why wouldn't we watch? Why wouldn't we send an unmanned, unarmed drone to watch the strait where all the world's oil comes in and out of, if they're getting bombed?
Well, actually, I gave an introduction explaining all that, but Wade was the only one who heard it.
Oh.
So, yes,
okay.
You're right. There is room for suspicion. There was a rocket fired at a Baghdad embassy, which came from a hostile territory in East Baghdad. They messed with a couple of our oil tankers. The English Royal Navy is sending, like, watchdogs over there to protect their shipping lanes and things of that nature. I just don't like the verbal dialogue between Trump and Rouhani. Rouhani said he's mentally disabled, and Trump said we're going to obliterate him.
I know, maybe on their radar it doesn't show them that the drone is unmanned. But if it did, why would they shoot it down? If they knew it was unarmed, why would they shoot it down?
I'm not sure, but I saw two news sources, and one said that they shot it from a rock from a truck, but the piece of equipment that the Iranians were using, it was a fancy tanker with three giant missiles in a, you know, angular position on the back. They might have done it just to demonstrate military capability, one news source said, to show them that they are capable of doing something and that they can hit their targets.
That's a pretty ballsy demonstration. It could get your country wiped out.
True.
Well, I was under the impression that the drone was only $1.5 million. Come to find out it's $115 million. So that is
cheap.
Kind of like, it's pretty devastating. And it was a big one, too, and that's one reason they were able to hit it.
I bet it's got a $100,000 bolt in it.
Yeah, what do you so was it just that one singular drone that was over there for that particular purpose of monitoring the region?
I'm sure there's lots of drones. I'm sure we patrol that strait all the time. It's no anomaly that there was a U.S. drone over the strait where the most oil comes in and out of in the world. And it was happened to be after a tanker was bombed, so that leads me to believe that maybe we're keeping an eye on that strait a little closer, and why would they shoot it down if they don't plan on bombing more tankers?
I do know that the man that I approached today, you know, he's the primary foreign minister who has his own Twitter account. I want to just read something that he wrote on his wall. Just a second. Donald Trump is 100% right that the U.S. military has no business in the Persian Gulf. Removal of its forces is fully in line with interests of U.S. and the world. But it's now clear that the B team is not... He's talking about Trump's incompetence. The B team is not concerned with U.S. interests. They despise diplomacy and thirst for war. And this is Javad Zarif, the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran. So he's not pulling any punches either when he's talking about Trump.
I think if it came down to it, I think he's talking that way, thinking that Russia would have their back no matter what. They might not.
Well, I didn't have time to explain to John and Wade, but Russia has had a foothold in Iran since the turn of the 19th to 20th century.
Putin was warning Trump today not to escalate it. Right, but, you know, the whole world a month ago, the ones who were paying attention to what was happening in Venezuela, it was shocking. If you were following everything that was going on in Venezuela, it would be shocking to you that Russia stepped back. We thought World War III was going to happen right on our doorstep, and now we're basically assuring that oil gets in and out of the strait safely over in their territory. We didn't expect Russia to pull out of Venezuela and say, basically, you're on your own. You can't pay your bills. We're pulling our military support. We're not going to support you over here. We're not going to get into a war with the U.S. in their territory. Nobody expected that to happen.
Most of the Russian countries border Iran, so they have more at stake on that side of the globe.
Right, but it almost makes me think that there's an agreement between Trump and Putin that they both are against some of the same things. They both want the same things for their own countries, and it's really not worth it to destroy each other over a disagreement, no matter what each other's media is saying about them two. I think there's a secret agreement that they're going to try to be friendly, and they'd rather have no conflict. And that's what it showed me with Venezuela. Like, maybe there is something, you know, behind the scenes that they don't want to fight each other. Even if the media tried for 2.5 years to try to demonize Russia to ramp up the violent rhetoric, maybe they talk to each other and they're like, well, our media is crazy, but we don't want to fight each other because we're superpowers. How does that end good?
Well, according to Bible prophecy, Russia's going to be our enemy, Russia and China.
Mm.
Now, according to foreign policy, secular foreign policy, I do feel like the Iranians feel threatened because we already dominate Afghanistan and Iraq, and they really don't want us anywhere near their international borders on water or land. Especially since they're not doing us any favors and they dismantled the 2015 Iranian deal. The United States did.
Right, the Iran deal was no good.
Well, it wasn't too bad. They were complying and the Europeans and UNESCO supported it.
I would like the Iranian deal was kind of like extortion.
The problem is now Iran doesn't have any, they don't have any bargaining chips left. Like, what is their motivation for working with the U.S.? We're cutting them off by their left thumb. They're being depleted economically. Like, what is our motive to comply with the U.S.?
Oh, what is our motive to comply with UNESCO or the UN?
World peace?
World peace comes through world order.
Well, I think that England has a fair hand in international foreign policy, and we're their allies, and we should go hand in hand with them. The other
Unless
shoe is going to drop eventually.
Us.
Maybe if they'll fix the four ships that they attacked, maybe that would be a good first step. And we want a drone back, too.
Can't we just restructure Iraq and ignore Iran?
Ignore them? Well, we have ignored them until they blew up a tanker and we tried to watch what was going on over there and they shot us down.
Well, I just don't think they want us in there. Now, I understand your point about like monitoring ship travel in that region. Like, you know, the traffic as far as how oil gets circulated from country to country through that region.
I think
didn't
the oil belong to the Japanese? That's an ally of ours.
Mm-hmm. To tell you the truth, we are winding down to the end of the show. I'm going to have to look a little bit more into this. Like, I only have the diplomacy end of the bargain. All I know is that this Javad Zarif is really strongly trying to disprove the path, location, and point of impact of the U.S. military drone. He has a map on his Twitter wall of showing how we violated international waters.
Okay.
There's a peninsula called Jask, where he has it pointed out that that's where the drone touched land.
Right, and basically, their oil production is down, I think, 70% or so. They used to put over to 2 million barrels, and now it's like 500,000 barrels. So they're hurting that way extremely. And our production is up. We're exporting oil for the first time, so we're cutting into their market. And so the only thing they can do is disrupt the world market by attacking tankers in that area and making it unstable for the rest of the world. So what you have is a child who's in the store screaming and crying, I want that candy, and we've been giving them candy, and now I want this, and mommy, I want that, and they're just going to break anything in their way until they get their way. And Trump is the adult going, no, for the first time, no, you're not getting it, and grabbing him by the arm, and say, he's not beating him up, he's not killing him, he's saying, stop, just stop it. And deal with us. And this is what they understand. Currency. Oh, this is affecting them. And people are going, oh, this is bad. This is terrible. They're screaming. It's a child acting up. You want them to have nuclear capability and enrich their uranium so that they can go into a weapon mode with Israel in the Middle East.
That's the dynamic we're talking about right now. We're just talking about the fact that they're pissed that we're over there, and they don't find a viable way to negotiate with us, and they're frustrated, and it has nothing to do with their uranium program.
I see. Well, I'm glad you got the intelligence.
That's my belief system. I'm not saying it's right or you're right. I'm just saying that you're looking at it from the framework of how you feel threatened by that country.
I'm looking at the framework of what
actually works.
They don't want to be compliant with what Trump is asking, and because they feel if they cause enough trouble, maybe he won't get reelected, and they'll get someone like Barack Obama or a Biden who will give them another $150 billion in sanction concession. That's what they're banking on, that for the next year, cause a lot of chaos and will make billions and go back to funding terrorism all over the world and having raising their army of people to go into other countries, start up their mosques, and overthrow governments. And that's the plan. It's always been the plan, Jane. Just read your history. Why did we have the Crusades? Why were they sent back? Why are people in Beverly Hills from Iran who are Jews? They had to get the heck out of there because it wasn't safe anymore. That's why
they
came to
America.
I deal with people every day who thank God they got away from the Ayatollah. You live in an imaginary dream world of butterflies and unicorns that doesn't exist.
I knew four Iranians when I lived in North Rhodes. One of them had his uncle sent over here.
Every minute at a store, every minute, who drive Beamers and Mercedes, and they drive them because they came to America because they would have their heads cut off where they came from.
Well, you didn't let me finish.
For believing in
the
Jewish God.
One of my friends in the Northridge program, the Iranian sent his uncle over here in a casket dead. To prove a point.
Now you know what I'm talking about.
Can I segue into something else? The Supreme Leader, Hassan Rouhani, called Trump's move outrageous and idiotic, and he plans to permanently close the path of diplomacy with Trump because of Trump's new financial sanctions. So that's the bruising point. They don't want to deal with us anymore. We're at the brink of war.
Sounds like he's on the same side as CNN and MSNBC and some of the other countries that hate our way of life and our constitution. They want to break it down so we have a one world organization.
Well, we're breaking them down too. We're financially strangulating them.
Right. So let them go to zero. The people will revolt, overthrow their government, and they can start over and figure out a more peaceful way to live life.
That's one solution.
Or give the child candy, give the child every toy it wants, and every time it wants to get, and when it wants the nuclear weapon toy, let them have it. Because think about this, Jane. If they're this stubborn and they don't have new capability, they don't have the military to even compete with us, and they're willing to give us the finger and walk away and say, we're not negotiating with you, and you're going to create war. If we wanted war, they would be gone in a minute. So it's not even an issue for us. We're the adults here. We're the ones with the big stick. They're the ones dancing with the devil. So how are they going to dance when they have a nuke and they can launch and they have rockets? They do have rockets. How are they going to act, you know, all sassy if we don't put them down right now?
I'm pointing out differences between our nations and how negotiation could come to a middle ground.
Well, where's the proof of what they purchased with the cash that Obama sent them on planes? And why did it have to be cash? Why did it have to be untraceable in the middle of the worst crisis?
We've already discussed that before you came on the show, that the...
Right.
Obama could have given them, like, let's say a $3 million blanket check for proper pharmaceuticals to help the health of their individual citizens. That was my suggestion.
No, but he decided to take cash from U.S. taxpayers and give it to them so it's untraceable in the middle of a terrorism crisis with ISIS. So how can you say that Obama
I read somewhere in a professional journal that was frozen money that we owed them from the seizure
of
the Shah.
It doesn't matter. Money is currency. Currency means circulation. It's always circulating. You don't just sit on it and hold it for 40 years and then decide to give it back. It's new money. It's our money now. We can't be responsible for the actions of our previous administrations 40 years ago. Sorry, they lost it. But we had a president who was, on one hand, speaking out of one side of his mouth saying, we're fighting ISIS. On the other hand, sending plane loads of cash that's untraceable. They could buy and distribute however they want, and there's no proof. And that's our money.
Well, apparently they made that fancy truck with a 3-man rocket to take us down. The Russians probably manufactured.
Jane, do you have a rape fantasy? You realize you're building a culture that will rape you and kill you.
That's fucking bullshit, man.
Sharia law. No, Jane, Sharia law. You should not be talking. You should not be tagging submit.
You know what? You're not even making sense.
I'm not making sense.
You guys, I'm ending the show. Thank you for your input. Good night.
Good night.